the Pharisees are concerned that Jesus and John are baptizing and gathering disciples. Now, John is in prison, so they're not worried about him, but they are really concerned that Jesus is gathering and baptizing many, many more disciples than John. So Jesus leaves Judea to return to teach and make disciples up in Galilee. Jesus does not take the regular route to Judea around the district of Samaria, as most Jews do, but he travels the direct route, passing right through the forbidden district. Outside of the city of Samaria is a town called Sychar, where Jacob had dug a well more than 1,800 years before. At about 6 o'clock in the evening, Jesus sits by Jacob's well and he's tired and thirsty. His disciples go on into town to try to buy some food. Now a woman comes up to draw water, and Jesus speaks to her. And she's surprised because he does not have anything to draw water with. And even more amazed is that he speaks to her since she's a half-breed Samaritan. Jesus tells her that if she knew him, she would ask him for living water. Can he be greater than their father, Jacob, who dug the well? Jesus tells her to call her husband, and she says she does not have one. And Jesus says, yeah, you're right. You're correct. You have had 5 husbands, and the man that you are with now is not your husband. The woman cannot believe that he knows her life story. You are a prophet, she says. The woman says she wants to worship, but she must do so at the mountain just outside of Samaria, instead of the temple in Jerusalem, because Jews do not welcome Samaritans there. Jesus tells her to believe in him and worship in spirit and truth. And she says she believes the Messiah will come and he will make true worship possible. And Jesus tells her that he is the true Messiah. Soon the Lord's disciples return from town, astonished to see Jesus speaking to that woman. She leaves to tell everyone in the city about the Messiah. And the disciples try to give Jesus food, but he's not hungry now. Did someone feed you? They ask. I have food to eat that you do not know about, he replies. My food is to do the will of the one who sent me. Looking down the road, Jesus says, do you not say that there are 4 months until harvest? For the fields are white for harvest. And as they look down the road, they can see all the friends of the woman coming to meet the Messiah. Old and gray-haired people are coming because the woman has shared her good news. The disciples were chosen to labor in the fields, but this time they get to participate in reaping a harvest from someone else's labor. Jesus and his disciples spend 2 days in Samaria gathering new believers before he goes to Galilee. And the people of Galilee will expect great things when Jesus arrives because most of them saw the wondrous miracles at the last Passover feast. As Jesus is entering Canaan, where he had performed his first miracle at the wedding party, a royal official from Capernaum catches up with him to plead for his sick son. The people of Cana expect a miracle, and Jesus knows it. He tells the man to return to his home because his son is well. And on the way back, servants come to this official and tell him that the boy is well. When did he become well? He asks. It was the same time that Jesus had said he was well. Jesus gives them a second sign, the first occurring at the wedding party. From Cana, Jesus goes on over to Nazareth, his hometown. He begins teaching in the synagogue, and the people marvel at his wisdom. They have a difficulty believing this is the same Jesus who grew up in their midst. Is this not the carpenter's son, Mary's son, the brother of James and Jose and Judas and Simon and his sisters, they ask? They want Jesus to heal them like he healed the people in Jerusalem and Capernaum, but they do not believe he is the Messiah. Jesus offends them by not healing them because of their unbelief. Leaving Nazareth, Jesus travels to Capernaum, where he establishes his northern headquarters for the rest of his ministry. Jesus visits the synagogues and begins teaching and astonishing everyone with his words. Now, the things his words possess are more powerful than the words of all the other teachers and the scribes and the Pharisees or the priests. Leaving the synagogue in Capernaum that day, Jesus goes down to the Sea of Galilee, where he sees Peter and Andrew at the shoreline at the end of a long day. He says, "Follow me, and I will make you fishers of men." The brothers drop their nets, and they follow Jesus. Just down the shore a bit, Jesus approaches James and John with their father Zebedee. Jesus calls the sons, And they leave the father with the hired servants and the boat to follow Jesus also. One day, a man possessed with multiple demons comes to Jesus in the Capernaum synagogue. "What will you do with us, Jesus of Nazareth, Holy One of God?" the demon asks. And Jesus tells them to be silent and to come out of the man. He falls to the floor, he convulses, and the demons leave. It amazes everyone, and many believe in Jesus. The news of this miracle spreads throughout the land. Leaving the synagogue that day, Jesus goes to the home of Peter and Andrew. James, John, Philip, Nathanael, and all the other believers also follow him. Now Peter's mother-in-law is sick, and Jesus heals her of her high fever. She immediately gets up from her bed, and she begins to serve them a meal. As evening falls that day, Jesus continues to heal all the believers. Demons come out, fevers depart, illnesses evaporate. Everyone believes that Jesus is from God and he is the Messiah. The next morning, Jesus slips out of Peter's home before anyone knows where he is to pray by himself. And the crowd returns for the day and Peter frantically searches for Jesus. When he finds Jesus, he tells them about the crowd, but Jesus wants to go to the next town to minister. For the next few days, Jesus goes from town to town to town in the Galilean area, teaching and healing in all the synagogues, just like he did in Capernaum. The crowds follow him, and they begin to grow larger and larger with each new day and each new town. One morning, the crowd follows Jesus down to the sea, and Jesus decides to preach to the large crowd from Peter's boat, and he does, teaching them about the things of God. Now, after Jesus finishes teaching, he turns to Peter and tells him to put his nets into the water. Peter, tired because he has fished all night and caught nothing, reluctantly does as the Lord asks, and he catches an enormous load of fish. Peter falls to his knees at the Lord's feet and begs him to leave him because he is a sinner. Everyone is amazed, even Peter's fishing partners, James and John. Jesus calms their fears by saying, "I will make you fishers of men." And that day they leave everything and begin following Jesus everywhere he goes. By now, because of the large crowds, he cannot openly enter the towns, so he stays in the wilderness. And one day, as Jesus visits the cities around Galilee, he pauses for the night on a mountain, where he comes down the next morning. A leper kneels before him and says, "Lord, if you will, you can make me clean." Jesus heals the leper man and tells him to go immediately to the priest and to offer the gift for purification instructed in the Mosaic law so the people will accept him back into his city. After performing the miracle, Jesus returns to the wilderness to pray. From the wilderness, Jesus gets into a boat and returns to Peter's house in Capernaum. He is followed by a crowd, which by this time includes both scribes and Pharisees, and no one can get near him in Peter's home. Four friends bring a friend to Peter's house for Jesus to heal, but they cannot get into the door through the crowd. They climb up on the roof, they tear it off, and they lower their friend down into the middle of the room, and it places him right in front of Jesus. Jesus forgives the man's sins. And this act angers the scribes and the Pharisees. "Only God can forgive sins," they say. And in their mind, Jesus has blasphemed and, in a sense, claims to be God by doing the work of God. "Which is easier?" Jesus asks. "Is it easier to forgive sins or to heal?" To prove that he has the power and the authority to forgive sins, Jesus tells the man to get up and walk. The man gets up. Everyone is exuberant, and they say that they have never seen such a thing in all their lives. Down by the Sea of Capernaum, Matthew is collecting taxes in the area. And when Jesus passes by, he looks at Matthew and he says, "Follow me." Well, Matthew cannot resist, and he accepts the call. Now, Matthew invites Jesus to his home, and he invites all the other tax collector friends to join him at his party. Now, it occurs on a regular Jewish fast day of the Pharisees. Matthew's party violates the law. Jesus reminds them that even David ate the sacred bread from the show table in the tabernacle when he was hungry on the Sabbath. He also reminds them that the priests do their work on the Sabbath, and it is not considered a sin. Owners can rescue an animal that falls into a pit on the Sabbath without breaking the law. The Pharisees have made the Sabbath a great burden on the people, he says. However, Jesus, the Lord of the Sabbath, made it for man and not the other way around. As Jesus arrives in Jerusalem for the Day of Atonement in October of A.D. 27, he enters through the Sheep Gate, where a porch and a pool called the Pool of Bethesda exist. It is surrounded by a multitude of sick, blind, lame, and withered people. And Jesus sees a man there who has been sick for 38 years, and he's waiting for the waters to stir by the Spirit in hopes that he can be the first one into the water so he can be healed. And Jesus says to him, "Pick up your pallet and walk." And the man immediately begins to walk, wonderfully healed on the Sabbath. When the Jewish leaders see the man carrying his pallet on the Sabbath, they become furious. The Jews verbally attack the man for breaking their Sabbath law. "Who gave you permission?" they ask. He does not know Jesus' name to tell them. Meanwhile, Jesus does not stop, but moves on towards the temple. Later, Jesus finds that man that he had healed by the Pool of Bethesda, and he tells him not to sin so he won't get in trouble. The man goes to the Jews and Pharisees and says, "It was Jesus that healed me." The Jews then begin to try to persecute Jesus because of his work performed on the Sabbath. However, Jesus tells them that the Father is still working and he is continuing to work. Because he's making this statement, the Jews want to kill him because he essentially makes himself equal with God. Jesus tells them that he does nothing on his own initiative. He does only what the Father wants done. He tells them that the Father's plan is for him to perform even greater works, and that they will all marvel when they see them. Just as the Father gives life and raises the dead, so too Jesus will give life to whom he pleases. The spiritually dead will receive spiritual life, eternal life, because the Father gave Jesus the authority to do so. One day, soon, those in the tombs will hear his voice and come forth in a resurrection to life. And Jesus says his testimony is true, and the Father confirms it. They had asked John the Baptist about him, and he had told them the truth. John's testimony was a light to show them the way. But Jesus' testimony is greater because the Father has sent him. The Jews do not believe Jesus came from the Father. They search the Scriptures to find salvation, but Jesus tells them they will find condemnation by Moses in his law. "If you believe in Moses," Jesus says, "then you would believe in me because Moses wrote about Jesus in Deuteronomy 18:18-19. On the Sabbath, Jesus and his disciples walk through the grain field, and they are hungry. They pick some grain and begin to eat. The Pharisees, following the crowd, immediately cry foul because they have broken the law. On another Sabbath, Jesus heals a man with a withered hand in the synagogue. The scribes and Pharisees ask Jesus if it's lawful to heal the hand on the Sabbath. They want to try to catch Jesus breaking the law. Jesus doesn't disappoint them when he heals the man's hand. After healing that man's withered hand, Jesus withdraws to the sea, followed by a huge crowd of people from as far away as Tyre and Sidon and Jerusalem and Judea and Edom. The other's disciples have told them about Jesus' miracles and his wonder-working powers, and he heals many of them down by the sea. Now that evening, Jesus goes up onto the mountain where he spends the entire night in prayer. As morning dawns, Jesus comes down the mountain where the crowds from near and far wait for him. Jesus makes his way to a flat spot about halfway down the mountain where he begins to call 12 men to come sit around him. He then designates the 12 as his apostles, and he endows them with the same power that he has to minister as he has ministered to the people. After endowing these 12 apostles, Jesus begins to heal the sick, heal the injured, and heal those who are possessed in front of the thousands of people in the crowd. After healing many people, Jesus returns to the place where the 12 apostles are sitting, and he begins to preach his great sermon on the mount. With the 12 apostles selected and all the ailments healed in the crowd, Jesus teaches the apostles about the paradox of life that they will find in their faith in Him. The poor will have the kingdom of heaven. The mourner will be comforted. The gentle will inherit the earth. The hungry and thirsty will be satisfied. The merciful will receive mercy. The pure in heart will see God. The peacemaker will be the sons of God. The persecuted for righteousness will have the kingdom of heaven. And the insulted and falsely persecuted will have a great reward in heaven. And as followers of Christ, they must minister as the salt of the earth and the light of the world. Tasteless salt serves no purpose. Light hidden under a bowl serves no purpose until it illuminates Christ. Jesus tells the apostles that He did not come to do away with one single piece of Moses' law or prophecy. He came to fill them up and to complete them. The law says not to commit murder or adultery, but Jesus says if you have even thought about it, you have committed them in your heart. The law allows for a divorce, but Jesus says the person freed in divorce commits adultery if that person remarries. The law says not to make a false vow, but Jesus says to make no oath, no pledge at all, but to say at the time either yes or no, but not maybe. The law says an eye for an eye, but Jesus says to turn the other cheek. If someone wants to sue you for your shirt, give him the coat too. And help those who want to borrow. Love your enemies. Pray for them. Don't give like the hypocrites do. Don't pray like the hypocrites pray. Don't fast like the hypocrites fast. Store up for yourselves true treasures in heaven. The eye is the lamp of the body. A bad eye lets in the darkness of the world. A good eye lets in the light. Don't serve two masters, and don't worry about tomorrow, because today has enough troubles of its own. Don't judge the lost people in the world. Always take the log out of your own eye before you take the speck out of another's. Don't give what is holy to the dogs. Ask from the Lord. Seek from the Lord. Knock at the Lord's door, and He will answer. The way to the Lord is a narrow path through a narrow gate. Beware of false teachers, because they are ravenous wolves. You will know them by their fruits. Not everyone will enter into the kingdom of heaven, especially those who claim to be serving the Lord, but only to their own advantages. Build your house on the solid rock so it will not fall when the storms in life come. As evening falls, Jesus returns to Capernaum for the night, and He meets a Gentile centurion who asked Jesus to heal his servant. In his compassion, Jesus says He will go to his house, but the centurion asked Jesus not to make the journey, but to speak the word so the servant will be healed. Jews from the synagogue are there in support of the centurion. He and his servant had built their synagogue for them, and they are very grateful. Jesus tells the centurion to return home because his servant is well. And when the centurion arrives home, the servant is healthy, and he asks the time of his recovery, and he learns that it happened at exactly the moment when Jesus spoke the words. The next morning, Jesus and the 12 apostles head towards the city of Nain, about 25 miles southwest of Capernaum. The crowd from the Sermon on the Mount follows them, and as they approach the city, a funeral procession is exiting the town. Jesus stops the procession, and He brings the son back to life. The miracle grips everyone with fear, and they know God is visiting their city. Now, John is still in prison in Machaerus, back on the east side of the Jordan River, and he sends two of his disciples to ask Jesus, "Are you the expected one, or should we look for someone else?" Jesus tells the disciples to return to John and tell him that with Jesus, they have witnessed the dead raised, the sick healed, and the demons cast out. Blessed are those who do not stumble over Jesus. So the disciples return to John. John's disciples leave, and Jesus asked the crowd, "What did you expect to see when you went out into the wilderness? A reed swaying in the wind?" John did not sway in his ministry or purpose, but remained steadfast in every way. Jesus tells them that there has never been a greater man born on earth than John, Yet even the least of the Lord's followers will have a greater blessing in heaven. After commenting on John, Jesus rebukes the cities of Chorazin, Bethsaida, and Capernaum. To Chorazin and Bethsaida, Jesus says that if the miracles he performed in the cities had been performed in Tyre and Sidon, they would have repented in sackcloth and ashes. Tyre and Sidon are Phoenician cities that worship strange gods. In the same way, Jesus warns Capernaum that if Sodom and Gomorrah had seen the miracles performed in their city, Sodom and Gomorrah would have repented and remained until that very day, instead of being destroyed because of their sinfulness.